When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello here, and welcome to this special edition of Husker Online Live. I mean, we usually would call it post-game live, but we chose to get back to Lincoln. We're here in the lovely confines of the Husker Online office. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel, Robin Washett. What a morning here. I think we all had an inkling that it was going to play out this way. College game day came in at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning. They teased that they were going to have Matt Rhule on. Next thing you know, Ian Rapoport, your normal group of national writers, confirmed the hiring of Matt Rhule. 8-year contract, terms not disclosed yet by Nebraska. We will hear from Matt Rhule at 1:30 on Monday. So we've got a couple of days to kind of digest this, kind of look at things. But Steve, I'm going to go to you first. 33 years covering Nebraska football. Your thoughts just on this morning and this day?
Well, it's obviously a monumental day. This is number six since Osborne. This is the sixth head coach who's going to give this a whirl. Okay. I would say at this point, I'm not the one to look to just to sign off on anybody. I'm not even going to do it on this one. I think it's a good hire for sure. Seems like a good hire. I like the fact that he has steered big ships through tough waters. That's what I keep saying. And I do think it was important to get that type of guy. You know, Temple's not a huge ship, but it's a pretty big ship. Baylor's a big ship. The Carolina Panthers are a big ship. And he has all that background. I wonder about the recruiting element. I wonder how he's going to go about roster management. I mean, he's not really, really delved into Big Ten footprint recruiting.
NIL.
NIL. Now, we'll talk about NIL as we go here. I was just talking to Matt Davison. I like it. I think he got a, you know, in the pool of candidates, I think Trev came out pretty strong on this one.
Yeah. I mean,
what do you think, Rob?
My takeaway is they got about as good of a hire as Nebraska could possibly get at this point, just considering where they are as a program and the coaches that were available. This checks about every box you could look for. And there was never going to be a candidate that was going to unify everybody.
Who's like, close in that? Was that Fickell?
He'd be up there. But even guys like Urban Meyer, super polarizing. I mean, like those like huge pie in the sky guys. So like, I don't think there was a guy that was, everybody was just going to rally around saying, no, no brainer hire. Well, this is the one that's going to solve everything. But I think what Matt Rhule has done and his history of rebuilding desolate programs, look at what Temple was before he got there. Look where Baylor was about to be shut down as a program before he got there. Yeah. And I don't put any stock into what he did at Carolina, because sometimes guys are not good NFL coaches. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just good college coaches. And I think Matt Rhule is an excellent college coach. He builds programs the right way. He focuses on the trenches. I think he's got a way of getting players to buy in to his message. That was one of the things that at Baylor, what made them so good. Even going back to Temple, players always talked about just how much they rallied around Matt Rhule and the way that he was able to develop the culture within those programs. And for Nebraska, those are the most important things that they need to focus on. So as far as those qualities go, I don't know if they could have done much better.
It's interesting just the hiring cycles of Nebraska since Solich. You go Solich to a Callahan kind of out of the box hire, and it didn't work. And then you go back to a Husker guy, Bo Pelini. And then they go to Mike Riley. We still don't know what Sean Eichhorst kind of his thinking was on that hire, why he went Mike Riley. Then you go back to a Husker guy, Scott Frost. And now you're going back to kind of an out of the box pro guy.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to be unique about this hire is I would anticipate, I mean, we've known a lot of people that worked over there for a long time that have been around multiple coaches. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, there's a completely new group of people in that building,
right?
You know, a clean slate, his team, his people.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nebraska, eight years, guys. And I know we had reported and talked about this, but there was initially some snags with Matt Rhule, Sip, and you can kind of chime into this. You know, the conversations and the negotiations went back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And it really changed Wednesday night. And you have some very good insight on kind of Wednesday night and kind of Tuesday night when things really turned over at that point.
Pretty good insight. I mean, the timeline is that, I mean, listen, it was November 12th when Nebraska played Michigan. Okay. November 12th, November 13th is the day that Trev drove to Lawrence and talked to Lance Leipold in Lance's house. Then it was around that time. It was around that time when it seemed like, okay, Nebraska was talking to Rhule too. They were talking to Rhule at that time, but it seems like they moved apart. There was some kind of snag. It was during that time.
And the money, probably.
Money or years. It might have been years. He ended up 8 years. Maybe he wanted 8 years, and maybe Sean and Rob, maybe the initial conversations didn't involve an eight-year deal. Maybe it was seven. Maybe he wanted one more. I was hearing stuff like that. Okay. Now, so then it looked for a while like it might be dead in the water, the Rhule to Nebraska conversation. As I told you guys, though, remember all during this process, I kept saying, but you got to keep an eye on it. I don't think that ship has totally sailed. And I think Nebraska could go back to him. Well, that's what happened. Nebraska went back. That's my read. And yeah, so it was, well, I'll tell you what, it was Wednesday afternoon when a source told me it's Rhule, or it might, and if it's not Rhule, it might be Doran, Dave Doran, but it looks like Rhule. But the source said, get ready. And we did it. We came up and did
a 48 hour timeline. Is that what you,
yeah, that's what, I mean, I don't know. That's what I was told, was he had 48 hours to decide
on Wednesday night.
I was told on Wednesday afternoon that Rhule had been given a 48 hours to decide. I don't know when he was given 48 hours to decide, but it must've been Monday or Tuesday.
And there's people comment. I said, out of the box. What I meant by out of the box hires, no ties to Nebraska, no links to this school.
I'm glad people are
being critical of those words. I didn't mean it like as in completely a guy that we've never dealt with at Nebraska, you know, just like Bill Callahan was, where Scott Frost and Bo Pelini were guys that had a connection to the Nebraska program. So I wanted to clarify, that's what I meant when I said out of the box. There were no previous connections with Matt Rhule, obviously, to Nebraska.
Yeah, outside the box would suggest somebody that's bringing in like a option attack or Mike Leach or something like that.
No, but so somebody with no affiliation, but obviously a stellar resume coming in here, which for Trev Alberts to pull this off, I don't know on September 11th if the national guys would have predicted this. You know, when you talk about where this thing was at, you know, was this the direction a lot of the national pundits thought Nebraska? I mean, it's a home run for Trev to pull something off like this.
I'm not going home run. I think it's good. I think it's a good hire, but I'm not doing that. I did that with all these other guys, and a lot of them didn't work. So I'm not going to do that. It looks good. It looks good.
Yeah. And, you know, again, he checks a lot of the boxes. Yeah. You go back to Trev's opening press conference. I mean, Matt Rhule fits a lot of what he was talking about. When you go to culture,
yes,
you talk about developing from the lines out,
physicality,
you know, those types of things,
attention to detail.
And, you know, I also go back to, you know, talking about that outside the box conversation, or at least the outsider conversation. That was one of the things Trev talked about. He said, you know, we've got to cherish our past, but we need to start looking to the future. We can't always talk about how great things were in the 90s. We need to talk about how great things are going to be from today going forward. And so I think this falls in line with that, where they got a guy that is not a Nebraska guy. He's not part of the circle.
Right.
You know,
and that's what Sean,
and that's what I was trying to say. Yeah. So I want to be clear at that. Just like somebody that nobody had any thought of a year ago at this time.
Yeah. And you know, no, I mean, some people might not like that, but honestly, I think that that's a necessary step.
Well,
that's my opinion. I think Nebraska needs to turn the page. I mean, they're so far removed from those days. You can't keep talking about what you did in the 90s, what Tom Osborne did. It's a different game. Mm-hmm. It's a different era, different players. And there's nothing, that very little that you can connect from what worked in 1995 to what works in 2023.
Yes, no, but we can get into that.
Those guys later. Are pushing 50 years old now. I know. A lot of those players.
Yeah, I know. But there's certain elements of football that transcend generations. I mean, physicality. But that's what Kev is getting at, hey, with Rule. Attention to detail. Okay, I mean, I know we don't want to go hammer frost, and people actually will say, yeah, Simple, you're good at hammering frost in hindsight. But Frost wasn't really a detail-oriented head coach. He really wasn't. I mean, remember the special teams early in his tenure? I mean, he didn't even know who was kicking.
Clock management, yeah. Things over the time.
Yeah. Now, if Rule is really – now, you everybody that – the people I've talked to associated with Rule, like Jake Peets, for instance, they always talk about that, how detail-oriented he is. And, again, you said it. You're right, Trev. Trev emphasized detail oriented. Trev always emphasizes being detail oriented. Physicality. Trev always, I mean, it is at the podium on September 11th, he emphasized that. Process oriented. Jake says that Rule, in terms of being process oriented, reminded him of Nick Saban. This is a football guy. See, this is a guy who's immersed in it. We've had coaches here who weren't really immersed in it. Now, Rule is immersed in it. That's what Trev was looking for. So, yeah, there's a lot I like about it. And when I say I'm not just merrily signing off on it, like, you know, this is the answer to everything, I'm not doing that because we've been burned. But, I like the look of it. I like the look of it. Yeah,
you mentioned immersed into it. Like, Riley, you know, didn't feel obviously immersed into things. I mean, he didn't even own a home in Lincoln.
No, Bo wasn't a grinder. Scott wasn't a grinder. No,
Callahan was. Like,
Callahan was a grinder. Callahan was a grinder, but Bo was not a grinder. He would tell you that. I'm not saying anything he would tell you that. Scott was not a grinder. I think Rule will be a grinder. And I think, hey, listen, I think Trev would tell you this. This place needs that.
Absolutely.
This is the sort of place, and coaches tell me this all the time, this is the sort of place that requires that.
Yeah.
It's because it's not easy.
You need a captain of the ship. Captain can't steer and run the engine and all that stuff. Like he's got to be able to manage.
Well,
and when you look at Matt Rule, he doesn't call plays. Like
he
oversees everything. So he's not going to come in here and instill his offense, you know, that's or his defense or whatever. He's going to manage everything. Mm-hmm. He's going to have a hand in all three phases, every element of that program.
Yeah.
And that's, again, that's why he puts his fingerprints all over every program that he goes to. They kind of immerse themselves in his kind of vision and identity. And when he talked about on ESPN Game Day today, a huge message that he hammered home several times was a unified effort from the athletic director, head coach, president, all the way down to the secretaries that are working in the football offices. Everybody has to wake up every morning with the same goals in mind. And if that happens, then great things follow. Usually.
Well, and you remember Trev Alberts was really big in having a head coach not be the play caller, like be the true CEO, which led to Scott Frost in the offseason making the changes of him running the offense and bringing in Mark Whipple and some of these things. I mean, you always got the sense. What did Trev say once? I want a head coach that's a ball coach or not a play caller, not a guy. Because at this level of football, it's really hard to run an offense or defense and run a team and manage a game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen it. We saw Bo do it. Now, Bo did it pretty well.
To hand some stuff off, though, didn't he, at the end of Papuchas? But he's still really – like, Papuchas ran the week of practice installation stuff, but during the game, Bo would always
– We've seen all this. I mean, Frank Solich, until – Sean, I mean, Rob, you might have been there too. Until his last season, or 2002, mm-hmm. 2002, Frank called plays. And then, remember, he handed it off. Mm-hmm. Scott handed it off late.
It's just too much at a place like this.
I think it is.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Bo called the defense, but I think that I think that probably held him back a little bit. He had a lot of help, though.
What was his involvement with the offense? I mean, was it just completely detached?
No, I wouldn't say Bo was completely detached. I mean, we would watch some practices. Bo was a middle of the practice field guy, always looking at everything. No, I wouldn't say he was completely detached, but at the end of the day on game day, he was calling the defense. So he wasn't always thoroughly engaged.
I just remember with Frost, like you'd ask him defensive questions and be like, I don't know. You have to ask Eric. yeah. or whatever. Like he
special teams.
He was totally disconnected from the other two phases of the game because he was so focused on offense.
Yeah. Frost, just thinking about all these things, the attention to detail at the beginning, like just the decisions he made, how big of a hole it ended up digging him, you know, just, you know, if some of these things would have been buttoned up at the start.
Well, he wasn't very buttoned up.
No, I mean,
you just, what the Frost conversation, well, we don't need to get into the Frost conversation too much, but y'all, I just always thought, okay, maybe he's learning, he'll get things kind of squared away. But he never got it on. He never found any momentum.
All right,
so here we go. I mean, this is new. This they needed this, and here it is.
JJ in the super chat hits us up with a comment. Thank you, JJ. He's got a career path like Saban. He can recruit Texas.
Yeah, when he got to Baylor, one of the first things he did, I can't remember the name of the coach, but he hired a coach to his staff that was deeply entrenched in the high school football scene in Texas. And so there, like, he immediately created inroads to the Texas high school football recruiting scene, and it paid off instantly where they were able to tap into that. And that's how Baylor got so good so fast.
Hey, here's a question to you guys, Sean, in particular, because this is your expertise. Is it, how important is Texas to, if you're a Big Ten school, is in Texas important? Isn't yes. he going to have to?
Texas is important for every team in the country.
I still believe the 500 mile radius though. Like, you have to get Kansas City, St. Louis, Denver, Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa. I mean, you've got to build probably 60% of your class from that part.
Isn't Indiana? I mean, I've been told Indiana is underrated.
It's blue collar. I mean, because there isn't a perennial. I mean, Notre Dame's there, but maybe not a lot of the kids could get into Notre Dame and meet their academic requirements. Mm-hmm. You've got obviously the Hoosiers.
Anyway, yeah.
But Indiana, yeah. I mean, they're up there. But he's a Northeast guy too. I'll be curious.
Yeah.
Does he push into Pennsylvania and Ohio yeah. more?
Right.
Where Nebraska really hasn't had a lot of success.
Well, that's where we look at his staff. You got to look at the staff, and we don't have any inkling on the staff yet. So a lot of that footprint or where they excel in recruiting will be determined by who he hires.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got another super chat question here. This is from Cole. Do you think Rule was Trev's number one guy all along? I mean, I think he'd have to be. I mean, Mark Stoops might have been up there based on the contact that we know we confirmed when it happened. But how serious was that? Was it just kind of an inquiry that led to a new contract? Or
I don't know.
Was Trev serious about Mark Stoops? We know he's serious about Matt Rule. We know at least he was serious about Lance Leipold because they met him.
Yeah, he went down. He drove. He had to be serious about Lance. Took a Sunday to drive down there. Number one. Now the question I would pose to you guys is, did he have a defined number one? Do you have a defined number one going into something like this? You might not. I would have a defined number one that I would go after, but I don't know if I don't know if Trev would define it that way or not.
Right.
He probably had a big group he was looking at. You know, I mean, I've heard 14, 15 guys initially, and then how do you break it down from there is the question.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the obvious, every athletic director has a list and you have a short list, but to prioritize like who's
one
realistic, yeah. I think you only gauge that with conversations, yeah. third party directly. And so maybe that list changed over the first few weeks, couple months of that search. So where his number one going in may have been a little different than what it was when it came down to the realistic candidates.
Yeah.
Bob in the super chat has a question for Sip or any of us. Does Matt Rule have any connections with Mickey Joseph?
And oh.
I mean, the one that we know of didn't end up very well. Joe Brady,
right.
who was the passing game coordinator at LSU, went to work for Matt Rule with the Carolina Panthers, was removed or fired from that staff. And obviously Mickey has a direct connection with Joe Brady. So that's one of the ones we know. But I think in that, what did you think in that press conference yesterday? It felt like Mickey obviously knew it was Rule, and it just didn't feel like it almost felt like he knew his time was up in the air right now.
His time was up in
the air. It's up in the air. Like he didn't have a,
he didn't know. Yeah. Let's break it down with Mickey. I think most people agree that Mickey could be judged as essential going forward. There's nothing really right now that points to Mickey being on the staff. Mickey has said himself, he has no guarantees. He told Sean he has no guarantees. Okay. right? You with me, Sean? No guarantees. Mickey yesterday, yeah, I mean, he sounded like definitely his immediate future's up in the air. My guess is Mickey has offers right now.
I'm sure.
I bet
he might be able to go to Auburn now with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not speculating, but I bet he has offers right now. I don't know. I don't know where that is. We don't know the assistant picture yet. I don't know if we may not get a better idea of that until Monday.
Right.
Right.
The dynamic, though, of having a guy retained in a lesser role that had run the team for 9 games, that's a unique dynamic.
Yeah.
Because if things go wrong and players start turning back to Mickey for,
yeah,
you know, it creates, I mean, that can get dicey. It's just, if you're in the shoes of a Matt Rhule, there's things you got to think about. Like, you know, are we just going to turn the page or do we want to still have that element in the program? And it's a tough decision. That's why Matt Rhule got an 8-year contract for a lot of money, because he's got to make decisions like that.
Well, and the portion of the fan base, too, that was very vocal about wanting Mickey Joseph to be the next head coach. I mean, it was still going on even after the Iowa game.
It was.
I mean, that never really slowed down with a portion of the fan base. And so you would have that as well, to where, what if people start questioning Matt Rhule and say, well, Mickey would have done this. And then all of a sudden, year one, all of a sudden you're getting people second guessing you with people on your own staff. So there's a ton of value with retaining Mickey Joseph. Obviously, he's an excellent receivers coach. He's an excellent recruiter, and he has excellent relationships with a significant portion of the current roster, which could help you with roster retention come transfer portal time, and also keep the current recruiting class as intact as possible. But there's another side to that where, you know, there's potential risks involved with players, you know, their opinions and emotions surrounding that. And then of course the fan base,
man, as you guys outlined it, that's a bit of a complicated discussion. It is not
very complicated.
Yeah. It's not as simple saying, yeah, you just got to have Mickey back. Now, Trey Palmer's already announced, already gone. Yeah.
Which is not a surprise.
No,
but that was one you would
say. He's going to get drafted.
That was one you would say, okay, maybe Mickey can help keep a guy like Palmer. Well, that's off the table. Palmer's gone.
When you put together a record season like that on a team that really wasn't that good, I mean, he made plays on defense. I mean, no one did that to Iowa's defense all year.
I know. That was eye-opening, what Trey Palmer did. And that their whole – that I thought it was eye-opening.
Yes.
Well, I thought you were making a face
at me. I was looking at some of the comments. Scoffing.
Scoffing at
nothing. I didn't want to give it attention.
People, be happy on the comments. We're having fun here. Exactly. This is a great morning.
Hey, now, Palmer, yeah.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
The aggression with the game plan with Palmer to me was eye-opening. That they felt that Palmer was good enough that he could just beat Iowa with his speed. Iowa doesn't give up the deep ball very easily, and Nebraska he just ran by guys.
And they didn't get handsy with him in physical. Like, he was able to run. Like, some of the games he struggled, he wasn't able to really run free.
Now, Palmer, they didn't have Cooper DeJean, who is one of the better cornerbacks in the country.
Yeah,
and I also found it interesting they didn't move Riley Moss over. So a lot of times Trey was matched up with a true freshman getting thrown in there and then another, like, second or third team backup. So, you know, they thought they had a mismatch going in, and then that got exploited even more when DeJean went out.
Okay. Another comment here in the super chat from MR Boss 231. Does the Panther buyout money help get better assistants? Well, let's break this down. Currently, at least on the Scott Frost, Mickey Joseph staff, the assistant coach salary pool was $5.15 million.
Okay.
I'm just going to guess, but my guess is that pool is going to be closer to 7.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say 6.5. So yeah, we're on the same page.
Six and a half, like closer to.
Yeah.
And how does that break down? Okay, you have 10 full-time coaches. Sometimes the strength coach is included in that number, but I mean, you do the math. 10 at 5.15 is 515,000 per coach, counting coordinators. You go up to 7, that's $700,000 on average per coach, mm-hmm. which helps you pay coordinators over $1 million. So you would have to expect the coordinator hires from Matt Rhule are probably going to be 7-figure hires.
Yeah, I think so.
Would you guys agree with that?
Yes,
I do.
In today's era with the money that team school are making now, like that's going to be par for the course. You know, when you're talking about the big dogs of college football, I mean, the salaries are only going to continue to rise, especially with the money that's coming in.
Here's the bottom line. Now, this is where I say I tip my cap to Trev, because you always got to keep in mind who you're dealing with, and you're dealing with Michigan, Ohio State at the top, right? At the top of the league. You have to have somebody that you think that you can close your eyes and say, okay, this guy can take down Ohio State. This guy can take down Harbaugh. There's some guys that were mentioned during the course of this search process that I thought, I mean, that'd be nice. It'd be a nice story. I mean, he might be good in the West, but he's not taking out the big dudes.
Like Monken.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't like to name them, but yeah, there's a guy, you know, the guys probably.
Bronco Mendenhall. Yeah. I mean, just ones that like made you really like, oh boy.
Right. Is that really? That's a nice story, but I mean, come on. This is not Nebraska. You don't want Nebraska to be a cute little story. You want Nebraska to be in the title picture a lot, in the Big Ten title picture a lot. And I do now, this Rhule, I think, can go toe to toe with those guys, Harbaugh, Ryan Day. I do. Now, I think he can definitely go toe to toe in terms of how he approaches things. The critical element will be he has to prove he can get the players here.
Mm-hmm. That's where the staff conversation for me comes in. I know people question his recruiting. Well, your recruiting gets a lot better when you have dynamic recruiters on your staff. So the big domino has fallen. Now there's a whole lot of also big dominoes that we need to wait on with who are the coordinators, who are the assistants, mm-hmm. And who's going to make up that staff that will allow Nebraska to recruit with the likes of Ohio State, Michigan, if they want to compete at that level.
Right.
All right. And you got another comment here in the super chat, and thank you for bringing these. I mean, there's a lot of comments. We have almost 1,000 people watching live right now as Nebraska announced Matt Rhule's hiring officially. The news conference is going to be Monday at 1:30.
Okay.
So I think they pushed it back.
In the Hawks,
because they want people to get here, have time to plan. And you know, I'll be curious, when will Rhule get to town? Will he get to town tonight, Sunday morning? Mm-hmm. When will that opening player meeting take place?
Yeah.
Well, Casey Thompson after the game said that they had a meeting scheduled for Monday, a team meeting scheduled.
So it might be Monday morning, because you do want to let the players be home with their families for Thanksgiving. You don't want guys to have to rush back into Lincoln after just getting home from that. So that's one order of business. Got another question here on the contract, and this is from Cole in the super chat. And thanks again for all the great super chat questions. Wants to know best guess on the money. So we know it's 8 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, are we talking 8 years, $64 million guaranteed?
Ooh, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, look at Lane Kiffin with his potential contract extension with Ole Miss. It was an 8-year deal around $9 million a year.
Oh boy.
So that's Lane Kiffin in the SEC. So is Nebraska going to be around that range?
I don't know.
How much will Carolina be paying on the front end of the contract too? Like how much can Trev get away with not, or Nebraska get away with not paying as much on the front and make Carolina pay it? And then obviously those final 4 years, that's when the big money from Nebraska would have to come into play.
Yeah. There's a lot of variables in that discussion. And I think that will be it'll be a fairly complex discussion once we do learn the terms. My guess is it'll be backloaded. It'll be somewhat incentive laden. I mean, that's what's been happening here to a certain degree, but I think Trev's more about that. Backloading and incentive laden contracts. I don't know what that's going to look like, Sean. I almost hate to speculate.
But it's got to be at least $8 or $9 million a year.
Wow. You think?
I mean, that's a ballpark.
I'll bet. That's what he's worth.
Yeah. Nine seems hefty.
Well, that's what Mark Stoops got.
That's true.
Lane Kiffin. So the two coaches that benefited off the Auburn Nebraska carousel, and that's really all it's been so far, is Auburn Nebraska in terms of the big money people in this carousel. Mark Stoops and Lane Kiffin got really big contracts out of it. They're going to give them 8 years and $9 million.
Okay. Now, it's interesting that since you bring up Auburn, now I was told that Auburn did show interest in Rule, and Nebraska fans will be happy to hear. I was told very early in the process that Rule favored Nebraska over Auburn. I'm not sure why. I guess I know more today because Rule talked about why Nebraska was his choice on College Game Day. He really likes the fan base element, the history. You can tell it's genuine when he talks about how he revered Nebraska. Mm-hmm. He's that age where he would have
talking to T.O. was a bucket list item on his football career.
47 years old, so he can remember oh, yeah. the glory years. But it's informative to me that he favored Nebraska over Auburn. I'm not saying he could have had the Auburn job. I know Auburn expressed interest in him. One of the early when they were going through the early snags, that was one of the things that there's Auburn and he might be looking at Auburn, but he seems to like Nebraska better.
All right, moving through Super Chat. Are there this is from Tyler? Are there any common staff elements or names around Rule in the past that could join him? And we've hit on a couple. Scott Satterfield at South Carolina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Offensive coordinator.
And then the Baylor defensive coordinator. Blanking on his name now.
And here. Jake Peets, the former Nebraska long snapper walk-on from O'Neill, worked with Rule in Carolina for 2 years. Now, I don't know if Jake. Phil Snow's the defensive coordinator at Baylor.
Yeah. So he's the defensive coordinator for Dave Aranda, who runs the defense, kind of like a Pelini type head coach, who's the head coach but runs the defense. So Phil Snow has been with Aranda, and those are the two names that immediately
Satterfield
and Snow.
Yeah, and then Jake Peets. I mean, Peets, I don't know that Jake will be part of this or not. Jake's coach, he's the quarterback's coach with the LA Rams, I think. Double check that. He's an assistant with the LA Rams. I don't know that Jake will be part of this or not, but
offensive assistant
for the Rams. Okay. So I don't know if Jake would be part of this, but he might be. He might be.
And Matt Rule, if you're on Twitter, he just made a tweet, hashtag new profile pic. And he officially tweeted out a picture of himself for the first time on his account as Nebraska's head coach. Where do you think he was at today? It looked like he was at a beach.
Yeah, he was definitely out at the beach. He posted some photos yesterday of his dogs on the beach, probably doing a little family vacation before gets to work here. So yeah, that somebody was asking why wouldn't he be in Lincoln. I think that's why he's clearly on the beach right now and probably going to arrive in Lincoln either tomorrow or
and that will be interesting because there I know there are a lot of people that think that Matt Rule did visit Lincoln. Did he visit Lincoln? Has he
I don't
been
know.
Here? And we'll find that out tomorrow, hopefully. Yeah. If he came here, and I'm not saying he ever did, but we never could ever confirm that with anyone that we've spoken to, and we talked to a lot of people, but maybe did he come to Lincoln will be another interesting thing in this process to see Lincoln, check out the facility and some of the things around town before making this decision.
Yeah. And as far as getting here, there are those important dates that you raised in your story, Sean. December 2nd, coaches can start making official visits.
And then the 5th is when the portal opens. So they have a whole week to kind of like organize their cards a little bit here.
Well, that was a critical. And I think people were a little nervous about that. If it wouldn't have gotten announced when it did, people would have got nervous. Those in-home visits are important. Now you have to think, you got to think he has his staff pretty much together, right?
You would think.
So they can hit the ground running.
You would think.
December 2nd will be here quickly. You mentioned December 5th is the when the kids can go into transfer portal, and then December 22nd is the start of the early signing period. So yeah, this is all timing wise. I tell you what, I mean, I'm impressed with the way Trev handled this in an orderly fashion. This didn't really ever have the feel of disorder or, you know, like what happened in 2003 after Frank was fired, when it went 41 days and it was a mess. Mm-hmm. This was never, I don't know, you correct me if I'm wrong, but this never felt like a mess to me.
It did, just in the fact that nobody knew anything. And but so that, you're getting that, all these that, rumors order. And reports. So internally, no, yeah, it probably order. Wasn't a mess, but yeah. We don't know that.
It wasn't a public process. I think a lot of people
thought and wanted it.
Kind of came after the media like this is a public process. It was an intensely private process. And that's the way it should be. You can lose candidates if it's not that way. So, you know, I'm pretty impressed with the way Trev did this. I really am. I mean, it really, look at the way it fell into place. Today, I mean, think about it, guys. Take a step back. Look at how well today fell into place. They have an announcement, rules on college game day.
Yeah. Nebraska beat Iowa the day before.
Nebraska beats Iowa the day before. This all fell into place really well.
It really did.
Orchestrated well by Nebraska. Monday, you know, Monday there'll be the press conference. We have Sunday to kind of, you know, let it marinate a little bit, come up with some ideas,
get our sleep back
a little bit. I mean, but there'll be other things.
Oh yeah.
I'm really impressed by the way they handled this, Nebraska. Really impressed.
So just looking in our comments, there's still a lot of people that are calling us out, saying that we're not talking about how this is going to divide the fan base. And for one, we already talked about that. Two, what coach wouldn't divide the fan base?
Is that the
literally any coach that has been mentioned in connection to the Nebraska job would have divided the fan
base? Is that that? No, I want to be careful here. Is that are you hearing that sentiment?
Just in the chat and on Twitter and message boards, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's just society. Like, no one is ever going to unanimously agree on something.
Well, it is. I get it. But I also understand Mickey did have Mickey.
But there are also people thought that he was completely unqualified.
Right.
And then, like, there was no way that Nebraska should even consider him.
Right.
And so, you know, it just depends on what loud majority or minority you want to listen to.
What is the hesitancy that those people have with rule? Is it beyond? Is there
the unknown? I think it's the unknown.
The unknown.
I mean, we kind of know his background, obviously, yeah. But you still don't know much about him. But I think through our experience doing a lot of these over the years, once they get here, get their people in, buzz and excitement builds up pretty quick.
Yeah. So this hasn't captured everybody's imagination, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. And again, nobody was going to do that. All that matters is what happens now.
You can't let a few comments though speak for the fan.
And
base.
Guess what? Those comments get quiet real quick if Nebraska starts winning. So that's all that matters. This type of stuff is good for right now, for the off season. But once they hit the field, it's going to be determined by the product. And one thing that we should probably point out, you look at his track record, year one under Matt Rhule has been rough everywhere he's been. It was rough at Temple. They went 1-11. Same deal at Baylor. But then they got good very quickly.
Yeah.
Year two, year three, they're winning conference championships.
Never had the
they're competing
portal.
For conference
never had the
championships.
Transfer portal.
No, this so, is true. Different no. dynamic.
Now drill down on that, though.
But okay, I think that goes back to his building process to where, you know, he's looking for long-term development, not just quick fixes.
One thing we could do on our website is analyze what Nebraska has coming back. Now we agreed driving home last night from Iowa City. Didn't we kind of agree this team isn't that bad? I mean, it wasn't that far away.
They should have gone to a bowl.
Yeah, they were a bowl team.
You did lose a key component today. You lost Trey Palmer, who declared. That's key.
Which was expected.
Best offensive player.
It's expected, but it's critical. He's your best offensive player, Sean. And you're going to lose Vokolek, who's close. You know, he's up there as one of your
what
best
about
players.
O'Shawn? What about Garrett? I mean, I think Garrett Nelson will be back. But O'Shawn finally looked like what we thought he was going to look like yesterday. I mean,
he was a problem late in that game.
He freaking disrupted that game.
Good point. So I ask those questions. Who's coming back? Who's not? What is Rhule?
Casey.
Yeah, Casey. What's this picture going to look like?
He's the next big one.
This roster isn't terrible. I mean, Newsom's a big one. If you could get Newsom back, you think you get Reimer back, you think you get that – you get Hausman. I mean, Hausman, Reimer, an inside linebacker.
Henrich is back, too.
Henrich looks
pretty
good.
About A.J. Allen?
A.J. Oh, God, that's big. Man, that's big.
You talk about a coach that's got ties in Texas. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's going to help.
Yeah, A.J. Allen's a big, big, big component here. If you can, come on. Is he staying? Those are the kind of players that make a difference.
Is Applewhite heavily involved in his decision?
I don't know.
Applewhite was still making recruiting offers up until Thanksgiving for Nebraska, which I found interesting. I mean, he's almost kind of just made his own offers on his own, not really probably signed off by Ginta. And
you look at that you look at the offensive line, who's back? I mean,
Prohaska, Nuri Nuelinen.
Yeah. Ben Hart would be back. Piper would be back. Help me out, guys.
What'd you say? Did you say Corcoran?
Offensive line. No, didn't say Corcoran. Corcoran would be
the
back.
Center situation will be interesting. Yeah.
Hickson's the only one for sure gone.
Who would play center next year?
Bando.
Bando's gone.
Bando would be gone.
So those two are gone. Yeah. Hickson and Bando.
Bando and Hickson are gone.
But you could either have Ethan Piper and as Topsky. A center or maybe even Corcoran play. They had talked about Corcoran, but
Piper was the number two center this year.
That's what a new coach, though, is going to come in and make these decisions. And, you know, they'll probably get some transfers. We got more, a lot of super chats, guys. I want to get these in
because go
the super chats.
We have a lot of them to get to. So, Chad just said, how many top 25 recruiting classes has Matt Rhule had? You know, I don't know the exact data on that off the top of my hand, but what I do know is he's had more draft picks than Nebraska has.
Well, there's some things we need to look at here, Sean, to get on our website. That'd be one of them. What did his recruiting classes at Temple and Baylor look like? And he did allude today on College Game Day of how many players from Temple and Baylor made it to the NFL and stuck. So we got to look at that. I mean, those are the kind of things that the people are going to wonder about.
All right, Evan in the super chat. What about Bill Bush returning as a special teams coordinator? And once again, that's hard to know because we don't know what Matt Rhule's got already cooked up.
I know.
There, I mean, it's not out of the question that not one guy is retained.
That's what I was going to say.
Like, I think at the start, everyone thought Mickey had like a guaranteed spot.
No.
That's not the case.
No, mm-hmm. Mickey told you, to reiterate for people who just join us, Mickey told you he was not guaranteed anything.
No.
And it runs two ways too. I mean, Mickey might not want to be part of it. He might have a better offer. I guarantee you, Mickey will land.
Well, he'll need. I mean, if he came back here, he's going to need more than 600,000.
Oh God, he's going to need a million.
Yeah, so like 600 now in a pool that could be 7 million is below the market value of the pool.
It goes back to what you guys said, which is a fairly interesting conversation. What do you do there if you're Matt Rhule? Because you guys are right. It could create complications if things don't go well next year, right? Mm-hmm. People suggesting, did we make the wrong hire? Is the right hire on the staff? As you have alluded to, mm-hmm. there's still, and I hear it from people. I heard it from people last week when they'd say, Sip, what do you think? Sorry about the third person. What do you think? And I'd say, well, I think it's looking like Rhule. Oh man, you're kidding me. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with that? What about Mickey? I heard a lot of that last week.
Even after the Iowa game.
Yeah.
I mean, there was quite a cry on Twitter for, all right, David in the super chat, more super chats here. David wants to know, because of MJ's complicated situation, if Bill Bush would Bill Bush have an easier time staying on the staff? And we kind of hit
on
that.
What do you mean? What's that? I don't like, understand the question.
Mickey being a head coach for 9 games, that's kind of an awkward deal for maybe Rhule to keep him on the staff.
Comparative to Mickey, would that be less of a risk with Bill Bush?
Is yes.
Less
of a risk.
Yeah, I think clearly.
Yeah. Less of a risk. Less complicated. Yeah, it would be.
Mickey's much more polarizing.
Well, Mickey was the interim.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill
just
wasn't
that title in itself.
Yeah. Bill wasn't the interim head coach. Bill wasn't running the entire show. Right. Bill did an exceptionally good job.
Yeah. On special teams and defense.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to be pretty good on special teams.
Yeah.
And defense, come on. I mean, they played really well at times and yesterday really well, period.
All right. Prester has another super chat for $9.99. Thank you, Prester.
Thank you.
Is it possible to be both a CEO and a detail-oriented head coach? Which one of those is Matt Rhule?
No, that's a good question. I think I understand what he's getting at, but absolutely. I think, in fact, being a CEO allows you to be more detail-oriented for the entire program. If you're running a side of the ball, I've heard Rick Neuheisel talk about this. When he was a head coach, he called the offense at Colorado, and he said he'd have to go into the office at 5 o'clock to get his offensive game plan established during the week and do it from 5 to 8, because at 8, all hell started to break loose. You know what? Come on, if you're managing 150 people, can you imagine what comes up on a daily basis? Think about it. I mean, Sean, you managed how many?
Managing 5 or 6 is hard.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in that deal.
Right. So there's
managing you is hard.
Yeah, it's very difficult. There's a lot of issues there. But see, that's what I'm saying. I think being the CEO type enables you to be more detail oriented throughout the rest of the program. I do.
And it allows you to focus on details beyond just one or two aspects of your team. And I think that's the most important part, where you can have input and evaluation over all three phases, which where you're not so caught up in running an offense or running a defense. And I again, we discussed it, but that's what Nebraska needs.
Mickey's not the guy. You know, Mickey's not the head coach here, but you can still talk about him as the interim. Colton Feast the other day said, "Yeah, Mickey, he was impressed by Mickey." Now Mickey's a wide receivers coach, offensive minded coach. But what Colton say? He said he would always give me suggestions. Always say, "Okay, this is what you did. This is what you could do better." That's a defensive lineman. So yeah, Mickey was a CEO in that interim role. He wasn't calling plays.
And when we were at Rutgers at that team hotel, it was a long Friday where we had to wait around for the game to be played.
Yeah,
and I saw kind of Mickey in action on that trip, and you could see the way he led the team and the way the players really responded to him. And you know, as they were walking into meetings, he was outside greeting every player by name, kind of high-fiving guys, talking to each guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he built an unbelievable connection. I mean, it was way different than Frost style. Like, Frost just didn't have,
no, he didn't have that
type of personality is probably the way to say it.
Yeah, not everybody does. It's a style. I mean, some managers, CEOs are more removed. That's their style. Some are more kind of part of the fray. And yeah, Mickey's wants to be part of the fray. But you knew who was in charge. You knew who was in charge. And I bet with Rhule, hey, man, I'll tell you what. With Rhule, I can tell right now, you'll know who's in charge. You'll know who's in charge.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a misconception about him just being this kind of, like, I don't want to say soft or whatever, but like nice guy. But like, no. He's a hard ass.
Yeah, I've not heard that.
Like, talking with people that actually know him, he's got some grit to him.
Oh yeah, I've not heard anybody say he's soft. I mean, I've heard the opposite.
Well, I think he cleans up well and looks nice on the camera, but I think behind the scenes it's different.
Yeah, just kind of like his presentation. But when you actually work with him, or at least people that have worked with him, they say that he's all business.
Yeah, kind of. The more we talk about it, the more I like it.
Talking yourself into it. Yeah.
We've had about 1,000 people peek out on our live here. So thank you for everyone so far for watching. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett, you're watching Husker Online. Normally our post game live, this is Matt Rhule live here on Husker Online. As we had a late night in Iowa City, we left the stadium about 9, picked up a pizza, hit the road. What time did you got to your house? We got in our beds about 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I went to sleep at 2:30.
Yeah, it's closer to 3.
So we kind of knew what this morning was going to bring, especially when it leaked out. And I'll tell you, watching Trev Alberts, just a little, I saw him walking around. He seemed pretty calm.
He did.
Which let you know, like, he had a pretty good handle on where this was heading.
So, yeah, Trev was in the press box all throughout the game, before the game, and then during the game.
Went through the media food line, right, by all the reporters.
He did seem very calm. Like, he had this under control. You know, we were hearing different things yesterday. I don't want to get into it because a lot of it was not true, I don't think. But he did seem absolutely to have it under control.
All right. Well, making it through here for some of the comments. I mean, press conference 1:30, and it'll be interesting on Monday how big that is.
What are you wondering? What are you wondering, guys? I'm interested.
Initial staff decisions.
Yes.
Meetings with the current staff. Like, how quickly will those decisions happen, not only on the main assistant coaches, but your personnel and support team? Because there's a lot of people up there, you know, that have jobs. And so what will he do kind of with the back end of Nebraska football and the front end?
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, you talk about Brian Kelly. When he went to LSU, he brought in 47 new back end hires in 1 year.
Yeah. See, is that what we're, I don't know if that's what we're looking at or not.
Well, I think that's like the extreme end of it, but it's certainly possible. I mean,
hey, that's what else? Now, details.
Yeah. Like when Mike Riley was hired,
assistant coach pool,
they wiped out almost everybody back then. Like maybe 4 or 5 people were kept in the back end of things, right? When Mike Riley came, and that was it.
Trying to think.
Well, Kenny Wilhite obviously was kept on. Trent Bray, but Mike Bray's son, Notre Dame basketball coach, he was offered to stay and then he left. But there were only like 4 or 5 people back then that were kept on, and they were not coaches. They were like back end people. Okay. So are we looking at how many back end people, and obviously will any of the assistants be retained?
Yeah.
You would think that would have to be known by Monday.
Yeah.
I think some of that.
Yeah. Some of that for sure.
Well, especially just considering the timelines we talked about with visits starting to official, like in-home official visits starting to happen.
December 2nd.
You got to have staff.
Yeah.
You got to be able to cover the map and hit the ground running.
Yep.
Clock's ticking.
And if you haven't logged on, we have so much coverage already on Matt Rhule and HuskerOnline.com. Sipple did his initial column. We got the story from the news breaking this morning. Robin broke down the comments on ESPN's College Game Day. Grant Hansen has a social media reaction piece up on the front page of the site right now. Brian Munson has contacted and heard from several of the recruits. We have a recruit reaction piece. So tons of great content pieces right now. On the site to get caught up on the Matt Rhule hire, just as we kind of digest through this Saturday morning and the big news that's happened here in Lincoln. A great time to join Husker Online too. $25 gets you on for 1 year, all the way up until the start of football season next year. So for $25, you'll have access basically until September 1st of the website. So make sure you're taking advantage of that great deal that we currently have. And let me tell you, the numbers, the traffic that we've had in the last 2 weeks, it's been remarkable. So a lot of interest in what's going on.
Should be a lot of interest. It's a major change. This is the future. This is the guy that's going to lead that program. And it's as big. This is big. I mean, we'll try to break it down as best we can. You know,
somebody brought up a question. What about Vince Ginta?
Yeah, what about him, Sean?
Well, he never worked with Matt Rhule. He was not a part of Matt Rhule. He came in.
Vince Ginta, tell people who Vince Ginta
is. So Vince Ginta is a hire that Bill Callahan made years ago, and he came back to Nebraska to work with Scott Frost this year.
To run the recruiting department.
Right. Kind of Bob Welton, who's Nick Saban's chief recruiting guy, had that position for Scott Frost, left in like 2 months, went to Alabama. Frost never replaced that role. Hired Ginta this year. Ginta had worked at Wisconsin, Utah State, I believe, and Utah and Oregon State. So he'd been all kind of around, but he had never worked with Matt Rhule. So Ginta and Rhule have never been on the same staff. So it's unknown. In fact, there's only one person I know of in the building that's worked with Matt Rhule, Aura Garst.
Really?
The digital social media guy. He was on the staff at Baylor with Matt Rhule.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So just one of those connections. He could blow it out. I mean, it might be a totally new staff. And like you said, front end and back end.
Yeah. And I know people have mixed emotions about that because obviously there's some coaches you could really talk yourself into being valuable assets that certainly earned their stripes with the work they did this year with all the circumstances. But again, coaches, they have their guys. And a lot of times it's rare when you just say, all right, well, you from the previous staff can stay here, you know, especially considering some of the dynamics with a guy like Mickey Joseph.
All right. More super chats. Thoughts in Dion. This is from Bangarang. Thoughts in Dion going to see you in game next year.
Yeah. There's rumors Dion Sanders is going to go to Colorado, and Nebraska plays Colorado in week two on the road.
Okay.
So that's what, I mean, it'd be fun. That would get a lot of attention, especially if Nebraska is able to beat Minnesota in that Thursday night opener in Minneapolis. I mean, there could be a lot of national buzz about that one.
I always thought of Dion, if he's going to make this big jump up to the Power Five, that it would be in the Southeast. I thought that's where he would kind of put down his flag, so to speak. Yeah. So I'm interested in it from that standpoint, that Colorado's an interesting place for him to go. Now you look at Colorado now a little different. Like, there's going to be a lot of energy. If that's happening, are we saying that's happening?
There's just rumors going on right now.
Okay. Yeah. If that happened, man, you'd watch that. That's a border. That state borders you.
Now the Big Ten, does the new TV contract start next year? So like there would be an NBC, a CBS, potentially, and does that all start next year?
I don't know.
It's hard to. I know there's some, the CBS thing is still with the SEC, maybe one more year, but yeah, there's going to be a lot of inventory to kind of put some of these games on. David here in the super chat, David Jorgensen, has a comment.
Begins July 1st, 2023.
So yeah, there'll be potentially, that could be an NBC game, a CBS, or a Fox. No ABC, ESPN at that point.
Okay.
CBS, Fox, NBC.
David wants to know, do you think Matt will sit with the current coaches on Monday and do interviews?
I mean, I don't know. I wish I knew that.
Yeah.
I can't say I know.
Well, I think there are some current coaches.
It just happened.
I mean, some current coaches like know they're probably done. I mean, like Mike Dawson, Travis Fisher, the guys that were like, that were came here with Scott Frost from UCF, like they're realistic to know that, you know, this, their time's done probably.
Probably.
I mean, there's a few, maybe a Mickey Joseph, a Bill Bush, a Brian Applewhite, some guys like that, that are, you know, thinking, hey, maybe I'll get a chance. Mm-hmm. But I think most guys that know the coaching business know that it's tough to be retained. Mm-hmm. It's because when there's this much money involved, you want your own people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree.
So, well, it's not just money. I mean, you generally coaches go with who they're familiar with.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's at least conversations, maybe like a, not like a formal sit down interview, but just maybe like a feeler to where, you know.
Oh, this fascinating conversation because he might have it all done.
Yeah, that's true. It could be a total moot point.
Right. It could be a complete moot point, Sean. I mean, I would think, Trev, when you go to Rule, that coach better give you a pretty good idea of what he's bringing with him. Real good idea.
Yeah, there's one guy that his name came up early on that could, like a staff person, not a coach, but this Ryan Kelly, and he's the assistant athletic director at Long Island University. He had been with Rule at both Baylor and Temple as assistant director of operations, associate director of football operations. So that's a guy's name that
back end,
a back end guy that has been with Rule everywhere. And when Rule's name first started coming out, this was the guy, because Husker fans are pretty, what's the word I want to use? They're good detectives. They know how to sniff things out.
Sleuths.
Once, like, this guy told somebody that Rule's in play at Nebraska, and that story circulated the whole state of Nebraska.
Yeah, so maybe he'd be involved. And I just don't think it's a situation where Matt Rule got the job today and then woke up and said, hey, oh yeah, I got to start thinking about
start hiring
staff.
Coaches.
Yeah, no, he had to have that pretty well and a pretty good idea, if not fully set, who he's going to have here.
Okay, DSFS Cummings wants to know, he's very happy with Matt Rule.
Okay.
He thinks his RPO offense is physical.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know a lot about his offense, to be honest.
Well, and again, is it his offense? He doesn't call plays, so I guess it depends
on... He manages
it. Yeah, he manages the offense. So I guess we'll see what the offensive coordinator is, who that is, and what that picture looks like. But physicality, I have zero doubt, will be a major element to whatever they do offensively, just because of his emphasis on the offensive line. I mean, that's what he prides himself on.
Is D-line, O-line, trenches.
Developing the trenches. Yeah. And so that falls in line. You get, I mean, I don't know if Trev hires a guy that's not going to have a physical run game. I mean, he's seen what happens. Yeah. I mean, you have to be able to run the ball to win in the Big Ten Conference.
Especially the weather against Wisconsin was an eye-opener. Like, Trey Palmer, the way he ran at Iowa City, he couldn't run like that against Wisconsin. Casey Thompson couldn't throw like that. Mm-hmm. You know, Nebraska caught a big break in Iowa for a Black Friday game to have clear skies, limited wind, and 50-degree weather.
Yeah, it was crisp. It was beautiful. Yeah, no, I think you're right, guys. I think Trev was not going to hire. I don't think he would hire somebody.
Mike Leach.
Yeah.
Like someone like that's going to run something like that. That's right. An extreme, but like, you know,
or Brohm. I mean, I don't think Nebraska wants to be Purdue.
Well, DeBoer, you know, and to be, we talked about Kalen DeBoer. He throws it a lot.
Yeah.
Like he's a big pass guy.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, I liked what Mickey had said about it. I'm not comparing Mickey Rule. I'm not picking a side there, but Mickey said you got to look like the teams you're playing in your division, and you got to be able to run the ball, stop the run, and manage the clock. You know, Nebraska tried to operate in a way that it didn't really do that. You know, they didn't manage the clock. They let the other team dictate terms. That's what I'm getting at here. Okay, it just hit me why I like Michigan and what I believe in. Works in the Big Ten. You got to have an offense that dictates terms, that the terms aren't dictated to you. How do you dictate terms? You have an offensive line that dictates terms, that the run game can dictate terms. And it also can salt away leads and salt away games. Mm-hmm. And you saw against Wisconsin, Nebraska couldn't do that. They had the ball up, 14-9, 5 minutes to go. If you can get three first downs there, they couldn't do it because the offensive line broke down.
Zero push. They were losing yards.
Yeah, exactly.
So I found this from a Baylor story from kind of evaluating Baylor's run game post Matt Rule, and they look back on it and said, When Rule was there from 2017-19, they used much more of a pure drop-back passing game with an inside zone scheme.
Okay.
And the hallmark of the running game was, quote, line up and dominate your opponent.
Okay. That's beautiful.
No,
that's what Trev wanted.
Nebraska fans want to hear that.
Yeah, and the boss. The boss wanted to hear that.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
All right, some more super chats. Patrick Bruning says, this wants to comment on Colorado. They're not going to get Deion. They don't care about football. And I'll be more interested how many Nebraska fans are in Boulder and at Minnesota for those first two road games. Thursday night in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then obviously 10 days later on a Saturday in Boulder.
I mean, there's going to be a ton.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. Yeah. The first two games next year will be fun. All right, another super chat from James Boardman. What were your thoughts in the second half yesterday when Nebraska went conservative and Iowa started moving the ball? I wouldn't say Nebraska went conservative. I mean, they were just trying to run clock. And Casey Thompson was running the play clock down. They were doing what they could. I mean, hell, they threw that pass to Trey Palmer. It was like third and 16, and he got 15. He about got it.
Yeah.
So they were that close to closing the game in a couple of those moments.
The miss to Oliver Martin was wide open. Would have been a touchdown on an accurate throw.
Yeah.
I mean, so they took some shots.
They could kick the field goal to win the game, but there's a chance of it getting blocked if he missed it, the field position.
Yeah, they're playing clock and field position.
They played the odds and they punted. Unfortunately, the gunner got what's the word I want to use? Tricked by the return guy because he thought he was going to catch it and the ball just bounced right behind him.
Yeah.
So they couldn't pin Iowa, but I think Nebraska liked their odds that Iowa was not going to go 80 yards and score a touchdown.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know, safe bet given the way that offense had played, but
right.
You know, I mean, that's the risk that you, when you put that much pressure on your defense, which they've been doing a lot of, they did it against Wisconsin, they did it against Iowa. I mean, go back when they've had halftime leads, the offense isn't doing its part late in games. And I think that was a real problem for why they weren't able to close out so many games until Friday night.
And then that trophy, I want to talk about the trophy thing on the field.
The Heroes Trophy.
I got some pretty good video Trey has here. We can show you just from that moment on the field yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You had a couple photographers fall down on the scrum here in the middle of the handshake at the beginning of the game. But here you'll see the Nebraska players.
Going to get the Heroes Trophy.
This is them having the trophy, bringing the trophy into the stands.
Yeah.
And there are people, I mean, I love Iowa Stadium in the sense how close you are to the action. If you're a fan,
no, you're really close.
I mean, you literally, if like Mark Whipple was in a huddle, you could be like 2 feet away from him and tell him whatever you wanted to say.
10 feet away from him.
Well, it's,
oh no, you're right.
Two no, feet. There's yeah, no walkway.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. That's 2 feet. You're right, Sean.
I mean, look at these guys.
That's beautiful. It's a great scene.
It was a party.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
It's been
a
long time since Nebraska fans have been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just genuinely thrilled for those kids and those fans.
So look at Garrett Nelson's face when he's holding that trophy. I mean, that says it all. A guy that has never beaten Iowa. I mean, this season has been what it is. It's been really difficult. But, like, that moment, watching Garrett Nelson carry that trophy off the field like it was the Lombardi trophy, it just shows how much that meant and how important that was for those players. People can write it off. I mean, look at him.
Absolutely. Here's the thing, guys. Football is a hard sport, and it's not fun if you're losing. I don't think many guys would say, "Yeah, I'm having a ball when you're on a 5-game losing streak, 4-game losing streak." It's hard. It's a hard preparation sport. Your body hurts, but you know what? You know where the fun is? It's an achievement. It's in the achievement with a group of guys, and that's what you saw yesterday. You know what? This team did. You could tell. This team stayed close. I mean, that is and you know, we always do this thing where we credit Mickey. There's a lot of people that you should credit in that.
Look at Travis Fisher here.
Yeah, the entire staff.
Yeah, the entire staff and the player leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guys stayed together. And like I said, the fun of football is largely in group achievement. And that's why yesterday was great for these guys. They always have this now. Look at that. They always have this.
That trophy looks like it'd be heavy.
It's a good trophy. These trophy games in the Big Ten, that's what we've learned about the Big Ten. They mean a lot, baby. I mean, they, like that old oaken bucket and Paul Bunyan's axe, that stuff is huge.
Well, think about
it. It's huge to these teams.
Think about 8 years. like a young kid in Nebraska would have gone from first grade to eighth grade before they've seen Nebraska beat Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about how long that stretches when you're young, mm-hmm. like young fans, young people mm-hmm. don't have any recollection of seeing Nebraska even beat Iowa, let alone.
And there it was. There it was yesterday. Big game, a big win. Big
all
win.
Right. Let's go. A few more super chats I want to get to as we wrap up this show. And thanks again. We topped out at well over 1,000 live viewers at one time. So very, very well received show. Thank you again for everybody for watching us here today. Malachi Coleman, Dwight Boodle both made tweets. Does that mean anything to Mickey being retained?
I don't, what kind of tweet?
Just that they're all in, kind of recognizing the hire.
Okay.
Being supportive of a hire of Matt Rhule. I think it's too premature to say. I don't think we would know this early.
Yeah, it's high school kids tweeting. I mean, I only read so much into it. It's not a definitive statement by any stretch.
Like on an 8-year whatever this deal's going to be type of arrangement.
They've never even had a conversation with Matt Rhule yet.
One recruit, they're all is not like going to know this type of stuff quite yet. I mean, there's,
probably not.
Trev's nuts. They're feeding Malachi all the inside info of what's going to happen.
But yeah, so here's the timeline again. This morning, Nebraska officially announced Matt Rhule about 9 a.m. Matt Rhule joined College Game Day. Nebraska confirmed that he signed an 8-year contract. The terms of the deal, not yet known. We'll probably know that by Monday, but we will hear from Matt Rhule 1:30 on Monday. So from now until Monday, we got a lot of work to do to kind of find out more about the staff, what's mm-hmm. going on. Like what's on the Steve Sipple list now today?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I got to think about it. I mean, I'm interested in looking at the roster and seeing, you know, exactly what he's inheriting and what he might be able to keep. I'm interested in that question about how many guys from Temple and Baylor did he put in the NFL? What's that picture look like? Staff, I'd like to know the staff, but I mean, there's some stuff we're just not going to know when we get off the mic here. I mean, I don't think you're going to know the staff. I wonder if Mickey even knows right now if he'll be part
I'd imagine he'll be called in. He'll be one of the first guys called in. Mm-hmm. All the coaches will probably be called in at some point.
Yeah, we just don't know what that point is, but it's got to be soon.
Now, Andrew Ozaki, who works with us at KTV, is one of our he was over there in the parking lot and got a comment from Magua Clements, I know. And, it's so new. I mean, no one really has any comments yet. I mean, it's just I think it's all marinating with everybody. I mean, everyone got back last. The team got back about, 8:30 last night?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what time they got back, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know. The players, we'll find out on Twitter what some of them have to think. But I want to be respectful to guys. I mean, they just got done. They just got done winning a big game, and it probably hasn't fully set in what's going on. I mean, they obviously felt good about the leadership they had, and now there's going to be new leadership. And some of them don't know anything about Matt Rhule.
Yeah, I mean, they think of the last 12 hours for them. Right, I mean, they're coming off like one of the most emotional win maybe of the Scott Frost mm-hmm. era, mm-hmm. Mickey Joseph era. And then, they wake up the next morning, they got a new head coach, that's a lot.
And there'll be kids that don't know anything about Matt Rhule.
No doubt.
Did you get the sense they were adamant maybe to not have this thing officially inked until the game was over?
Yes.
Just to respect yesterday.
I think so.
I felt that way, like that they kind of had it in a holding tank.
Yeah.
Basically done. But they didn't do it officially until after the game out of respect to the kids.
I think so.
It would have been. I mean, it kind of was a nightmare covering that game. You and I got up and talked in the press box probably 15
because we were hearing things. I mean, we had heard that the deal wasn't done yesterday. So, I mean, I don't know what was accurate or what was not. But, yeah.
A lot of stuff was being thrown out.
Yeah, there's a lot flying around during the game. I mean. Nebraska went up 17-0 when I got a call from a source that said it's done. So that's what I mean. When I say awkward, it was kind of awkward. I'm trying to cover this game and Nebraska's up 17-0 against Iowa. And now my focus has to shift a little bit to the Rhule story. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant by awkward.
Even driving back just like midnight in Western Iowa, sitting there like,
Well, we knew what was going on then, though. That's the good thing.
But yeah, Trev really thought this out well. Like, hey, let's get it teed up to go on College Game Day.
Yeah,
take the morning.
There
headlines.
Was a plan, and just look at the timing of how everything kind of got out yesterday. Like, coincidentally, all of the national reporters started hearing from sources that Nebraska was closing in on Matt Rhule all at the same time. Like, that happens by design.
Yeah.
And the timing of it to have that conversation go on during a national Black Friday broadcast, then lead right into an interview with Matt Rhule on ESPN College Game Day. Trev's calculated. He does things that way.
Yeah.
Like, that was in his mind. And then I think first and foremost, though, he didn't want it to take away from the players' attention going into that game. Like, the news really didn't surface until the game was already being played. The players weren't going to see it.
Would you say it was orchestrated about as well as you could expect, the whole thing?
I mean, in today's day and age, to keep something like that as secretive as he did. Now, I know that there were plenty of rumors flying around, but like, as far as like legitimate reports that came out, it was about as locked down as you possibly could imagine. And to do that at a place like Nebraska, where there are no secrets and everybody talks, that's impressive.
Well, and then beating Iowa on top of that. I mean, it just, the momentum that he's going to get, because this season was tough for a lot of people, but at least you have that win over Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the best win for Nebraska. I mean, do you count the 2020 Penn State win as a good win?
2020 Penn? Not really.
No,
I mean, it was kind of like
COVID win. No, I barely remember it. I
was just trying to think like what other win.
Penn State wasn't good that year.
Like, the Frost era never had an emotional win of
Michigan State in 2018.
That would be the closest one.
That's the first one.
9-6
for me.
Yeah. Snow game.
I mean, the Rutgers game, but it was Rutgers, you know, when they went out there on that Friday night, when we were in there 2020.
Yeah.
That was just an ugly season with COVID and everything else. But this was the best moment, arguably, in the 5 years of the Frost era.
Yeah, I wonder what fans – I don't see the comments like you guys. I would think that fans, Nebraska fans, would feel pretty good right now after a win against Iowa on Iowa's home field, and then followed by this sort of news, this new direction. I mean, it seems like
– most do. Some don't.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, a couple more super chats. Tyler Redwine, how about the tweet that Rhule made yesterday with the German Shepherd, a black lab, and a rat terrier tweet by Rhule? Can you interpret that? What that means?
So he posted a photo of his dogs at their beach house or wherever he is right now, and they're positioned where there's a German Shepherd, a black lab, and a little rat terrier, GBR. He's talking about sleuths.
Yeah.
The Husker Online, Red Sea Scrolls, sleuths got to work and they deciphered that.
That's pretty good.
I mean, look, the power of our board has no end.
Don't underestimate Husker fans.
No, that's impressive.
There you go. There's the first.
Yeah, right there.
Oh, and then Black Friday.
Yep. Hashtag Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. Good looking dogs.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing.
And Matt Rhule has three children, right? He's three.
I don't know that.
He talked about that, has younger.
I know he has kids. I don't know how.
I believe it's three. And talked about that just in his oldest son wanted him to get back into coaching, he said in the interview. So it'll be interesting. His whole family, totally different than when Frost was hired. When Frost was hired, he had none of his family here. Remember that? It was just a completely different feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd imagine Rhule's going to be very front and present with his entire family.
I don't know. We'll see on that. I don't know if he will be or not. I think so.
I mean, he was at his other ones.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Whatever. I mean, that stuff matters to a certain extent, I guess.
Yeah.
K NECA, one more here. Temple Baylor, not Big Ten teams. OCDC, all that matters. How is his record versus the Big Ten? Remember, versus Michigan State.
Okay.
Well, I will say, go back to at Temple. He went into State College and he hammered Penn State.
Did they hammer?
Yeah. Opening game of the season.
It's pretty good.
And it was 2016, good. I think.
It's pretty good.
They went into, I mean, imagine a smaller school in the state of Pennsylvania going in to Penn State.
It's big.
And hammering them.
It's big. Oh, it's big. I mean, Yeah. I don't know how much Baylor played. I don't know how much better played the Big Ten, but no, he's right. He's right. You really do look at the OC and DC here. It's huge. Those are huge positions. That's the kind of things that these next few days, that's what it's about. Sizing up that sort of thing. And Sean, you'll be better at this than I, but you got to look at the staff with a recruiting eye, each individual staff member, what kind of recruiting acumen does he bring? That's the sort of stuff that the fans are going to be interested in. But yeah, the OC and DC,
huge,
huge. I mean, and then how is, another question is, how is Rhule going to shape his NIL operation. Right now, Nebraska has two collectives, two main collectives. I think it'd be better to have one main collective, but right now there's two. Now, what's Rule? I mean, how much is Rule? How much does he know about it? And how much will his, I got to think that his first few days here, he better get a handle on all that, right?
Yeah. And will they let them both meet with him? How will they do these things? Because
how will that apparatus look?
One was kind of put together by Trev Alberts, Big Red Collaborative. The other has the infrastructure of the current collective, ABM, but it's all being backed by the program's arguably largest booster, the Pede family, and run by Matt Davis. And so there's dynamics politically on both sides of this collective.
Yeah, you don't need any. You need those people pulling together. So what's that apparatus going to look like? That's critical in this discussion.
But so going back to that Temple Penn State game, Temple came back from down 10-0 and scored 27 unanswered points. They sacked Christian Hackenberg 10 times in that game.
Jeez.
First win by Temple over Penn State since 1941. Man. This was back in 2015, I believe. So, and to your point about the coordinators, guess who his defensive coordinator was in that game? Phil Snow.
Oh, is that right?
So Phil Snow is his DC at Temple. He was his DC at Baylor, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So and who is the
Scott
guy that
Satterfield?
Yeah. And who is the guy that
he's at South Carolina now? Call him play Satterfield.
Yeah. Who is the guy that you retweeted? The Dave Sittler or whatever.
He said Snow.
Yeah, he said Snow. He called him Rule's security blanket. So seems pretty obvious that might be the direction Rule goes with his DC, because his two previous collegiate stops, that was his DC.
Would Snow join immediately? Join the staff. Immediately.
Marcus Satterfield. I said Scott Satterfield. Scott Satterfield is the Louisville head coach. Marcus Satterfield is the South Carolina offensive coordinator. His background as far as Marcus Satterfield, he's in his first year or second year at South Carolina. He got there in 2021. He was with the Carolina Panthers in 2020. He was at Baylor from 2018 to 2019. Before that, Tennessee Tech. And then he was at Temple from 13 to 15. So, he's got an extensive background that's been with Rule. He was a head coach at Tennessee Tech for a short while as well.
Okay.
And that is Marcus Satterfield.
Okay. Yeah, you might see him, you might not. Again, these are the things that we're going to be watching very closely.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap up the show?
No, I'm glad everybody joined us.
Yeah, once again, make sure check out Husker Online. There's going to be so much coverage in the really coming months between transfer portal, coaching hires, the new regime, everything, roster stuff. There's so many things that you're going to want to be on Husker Online for, and we will keep you up to date on that. Close to 10 content items up already this morning. So make sure you get on our front page, get caught up on all of the Matt Rule things. Laura Anderson does chime in with one more quick super chat. Name one thing Trev said he wanted that Rule doesn't have.
This kind of goes back to my original point. Like, you look at all the boxes that Trev laid out, Rule checks to some degree about every single one of them. Now,
the one
concern that I would have is he hasn't been anywhere a long time. And you're talking about signing a guy to an 8-year deal. Is Matt Rule going to be here for all 8 years of that contract?
And what's the buyout?
Yeah. So that would be the one concern. You want to talk about this, destination, is this his dream job type situation? Or if he does well, is he going to be looking at other options? Is there another stepping stone that he wants to attain beyond Nebraska? Well, I don't know that. I'm just saying, if there's one question that I have about a box that he might not necessarily check, that would be towards the top.
Yeah, me. I don't think that was a box, though. I don't think Trev...
You're not worried about the long term?
Well, I don't think he talked about that, Trev, in his initial... Stability. On September 11th.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one good column. I could go back to that September 11th. And he did...
And just see how Rule lines up to it.
Yeah, he mentioned 6 or 7 things. Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Tyler goes, what if the super chats just keep coming? Will you guys keep extending the show?
Well, I don't see why not. I got nothing to do.
So you got to buy Sipple's lunch now.
No, I'm not hungry. So we're all right. I'm not hungry. I had both.
We ordered a pizza on the way home from Iowa City, the Wigan Pen.
It's pretty good.
Maybe the best pizza in the Big Ten.
It's good pizza. You guys are a bigger fan of garlic on pizza than I am. I'll say that publicly now.
A little too strong for you?
Yeah, a little
too garlicky?
Yeah.
It was a pretty strong garlic on that one.
I mean, they were like the
pizza.
Clothes.
Don't get me wrong. I liked it. I don't do garlic on pizza very often.
It's delicious.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining us here on this special.
We done?
We've been gone for 80 minutes almost.
It's pretty good.
So we've had an hour and 20 minute show.
Just getting started.
Trey Yannity, our back end producer. Thank you as well for coming in here on a holiday weekend Saturday and getting us all set up with everything. But Nebraska hires Matt Rhule. Make sure you check out HuskerOnline.com. We've got plenty of coverage. Great sign-up special as well. $25 gets you access to HuskerOnline.com all the way up until the start of next football season. Thanks again for joining us.